Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Yacht Crew Vlogs right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Rhea. I am your host, and today I am joined by Brennan Dates. How are you, Brennan?
I'm well, Rhea. Very well, yeah. How are you?
Good. Well, you know what? A lot of people out there are going to know you for the simple fact that you sort of shot up to a bit of fame on social media through your quarantine kitchen updates. And, you know, it was pretty cool, actually. I came across it just randomly one day, and then we started sharing it as well with your permission. What was that all about? I mean, where did you come up with the concept for that?
Yeah, that was quite fun. Fame was not the motivator. It's an interesting point. It was just kind of it felt like it snowballed. But the basic premise was I have friends and family who I love and respect. A lot of them haven't cooked ever in their life. I know, like if I go to visit them, we go out to eat, which obviously I love to go out to eat as well. But I could envision their future story of I was in lockdown for 2 months, 3 months, and I had to cook myself. So I kind of through that, empathizing with them, I realized that there's probably a lot of people in that situation. And I just wanted to put up easy techniques that were stuff that everyone's going to cook, everyone's going to have. And it just kind of snowballed. And the intro came from a German filmmaker friend of mine. I asked him to do something simple. He ended up spending 5 hours on it. And it turned into something. It was quite interesting. Like that wasn't the plan at all. And then the idea was just to be helpful and have something fun. And I would say that I got a lot more out of it than I put in, even though I put the effort in and did it. But just to get so much positive feedback back about even just thank yous, but also people posting pictures of these are the roasted potatoes. And it'd be like their first try and they nailed it. I'm like, you know, that means I was conveying something. It worked. And that's basically it in a nutshell with quarantine kitchen. And obviously it comes to an end because no one's in quarantine now, but who knows? But it was a very fun project. Very fun.
Well, let's find out a little bit more about you, the person. Where are you from originally? And what were your sort of goals and aspirations as a little one?
Oh, all right. Well, I don't know how much to talk, how far back or for how long, but I'll try to keep it brief. Born and raised in Vermont with a brief stint in New Jersey, and then back to Vermont. I've always wanted to be a chef since I was about 13 years old. I remember telling my neighbor I wanted to be a chef, and he just looked at me like I was crazy. I was like, no way. And then I got a scholarship to culinary school when I was 16. I won a recipe contest for the state of Vermont, so I got a little scholarship through Johnston & Wales, Rhode Island, and then 2 years there for an associate's degree, and I got recruited to work at this really prestigious resort in the Cape Cod in Massachusetts. That turned into another job in the Florida Keys that are really even more prestigious, Relais Chateau rating of Little Palm Island. Worked there for an amazing Swiss chef, French trained, and I was so low down on the totem pole. Like, everyone was international, everyone was a ninja, and I'm just like this 19-year-old. Hey, what's going on? And so many stories of saying the wrong thing that I won't go into. Just missteps, social missteps in the kitchen. And it's just, you see young people doing it now. Let's see, what else? Then that's when I heard about yachting. So that puts me about 19. And then I went to Boston on my own and lived with one of my best friends ever. And just went around to the best restaurants in Boston. I went to about 4 places, shot my resume around. I didn't care too much how much I made an hour as long as I got hired. And I ended up working at Biba for Lydia Shire and Susan Regis, some of the most talented chefs I've ever come across, and really like ahead of their time. In a time in the States that we had no Michelin stars. We had no international kind of rating system to, and Michelin stars is a whole other conversation about their value, but very interesting time, very kind of moving around youth in different situations inside the States. And then I heard about yachting, and then I was 24 at the boat show. Actually, I was a deckhand for 6 months just to get into the industry. Like, my friend Will was a captain, and he's like, well, come work for me as a deckhand, and then I'll drop you off in Fort Lauderdale for the boat show, and you can look for your chef job then. So that was kind of how I started in a nutshell.
So what was your first job then on a yacht? I mean, aside from once you were finished as a deckhand, what size yacht did you get on as a chef for your first job?
Oh, it was grim. Amazing husband and wife team, but it was a 90 foot, so whatever that 27 meters, whatever that is, Broward, which is a very just laughed at make of yacht. Not too many people know about. It's not around anymore. It wasn't very well made, and I just had to break in. I was rather young at the time to become a chef, and as you can probably imagine, the industry didn't look anything like it does now. This was 18, 19 years ago, so it was a very different industry, and it's been amazing just to kind of watch it change and grow into this massive thing that it is now.
Well, and so this excursion, it was 8 weeks that you were out on charter. Was this originally a charter that was booked for the purposes of self-isolation?
Yes, definitely. And it was done at a very, really tumultuous time, as everyone has their same story at the same time, where many people didn't believe in it, many people weren't going to quarantine or hadn't been told to quarantine. And as you can tell, like I think the ripples hit the yachting industry a little bit before everyone else, because med season was coming up, Spain was not looking good, Italy was not looking good, and we knew that kind of the season was not going to happen the way it normally does. So I think a lot of the brokers were nervous and happy to just explore any kind of charter areas that could be brought to them, and this is one of them. So it was a long charter. It was 7 weeks, and then they extended a week.
And so when you guys first got on the yacht, did you have to quarantine? Was there any testing done, or were you just rocked up to the yacht and went to work?
No, it was at a time well before testing. I got to the yacht an hour before the charter guest did. It's just one of those situations where I don't know why I say yes sometimes, because it's so much harder than it needs to be. But it, looking back on it now, it's hilarious. So I get there an hour before guests, no quarantine. Even the crew hadn't been quarantined yet. It was just, let's all pack ourselves onto a yacht, go out on anchor. No one's allowed off the yacht now. And let's just hope no one has it. That was the scenario.
So how many times did you come back for supplies? Or was it just basically you were out at sea for the entire time?
We were on anchor, and we would send all the kind of provisioners had packed up in the I'll just say Caribbean. Doesn't matter really where we were. So everyone was, we were on our own, and I had posted on one of the kind of crew Facebook pages, and a couple people chimed in, hey, I can help. And it turned into someone that had a bar that couldn't open her bar, and she just shopped ashore for us. And it was very interesting to watch that situation change. How it was grim in the beginning. You couldn't get anything. Everything was shut down, even container ships, nothing. And then that kind of like our best order, of course, was the crossing order as we crossed from the Caribbean to Europe. It was just like the best produce. All the farms were kicking off again. The whole time you're scratching around for like any kind of leaf lettuce, and then at the end you have 7 varieties just picked today for you. It was an interesting situation for sure. And looking back on it now, it's great. It's one of those Stockholm syndrome things where you're in the middle of it, you're like, why? Why does this always happen? Why am I always just chucked in it? But it's quite funny now.
So, I mean, I saw throughout the progression of Quarantine Kitchen that, I mean, initially it was you, and it was a few days into your charter that you started. It wasn't at the very beginning. But I saw the progression. Eventually, you started having your fellow crew members come on board as well and participate in the making. Was this something that the entire crew sort of embraced and really enjoyed and gave them something, I guess, else to focus on?
Not really, because it was a freelance temporary position, I could kind of get away with doing a little bit more. Like obviously the integrity of the charter and the boat had to be thought about. So I constantly had to worry about uniform. The crew to be involved, just not because they didn't want to be, but at a certain point, it was just in the galley. It was our thing.
Well, what was the, I mean, out of all of the ones that you did, what was the one that was the best sort of received?
Oh, I don't know.
I think both potato ones, the rib. And this is just kind of like as my memory, not like, because then you can quantify like how many views. But I don't think that's really the question. Those first ones were great because then it's like one of the things that I got from it, because I was lonely too. I don't know any of these crew and they're amazing and they're fun, but I'm still lonely. But it kept me connected with the outside world that was going through some shit. And I'm kind of here in my normal job. My life is 97% the same on a charter, on a yacht, on anchor in the Caribbean. But people at home are being stressed and they're going to cook. And so it was really, it felt like I was actually being helpful and more so than I even imagined when I first started it. It felt really good. I loved it when people posted their picture, their success stories. I tried to encourage them to like post their failures. Like, I helped. I had the time, you know? Somehow I had the time on a charter.
Well, I can imagine the headache trying to upload those videos while at anchor. Oh,
it was the editing. So if I started the first couple just editing on my my pixel phone, that was fine. And that app shat the bed. And then I moved to the laptop, which is a whole logistical thing about getting big files, like big unedited files from your phone onto your computer. And I have an Android phone, Apple computer. They hate each other. They don't talk. Anyway, I won't bore you with all that, but then I had to shift to a pro version app and a learning curve on that. But the internet wasn't that bad. It was just a couple days where if we were anchored in a certain spot, you'd have none. But when I had data, I'd download YouTube videos to figure out how to use this app as I was going, and it's super helpful. Yeah, really helpful.
Well, do you know what? I've got to say the one video that I really enjoyed was the one to make and I still haven't tried it, and I feel really bad. I've got to buy the pans because, of course, when you were doing that, all the stores were shut, so we couldn't go buy the proper pans. But the one that was like McDonald's hash browns.
Oh yeah, that can be any pan though. Yeah, those are the potato ones that were kind of easy, but kind of simple, and no one kind of does it. I love them.
And well, I mean, the biggest problem.
You can make tiny little cubes. Sorry.
Yeah, well, it looked great because, you know, in Spain, they don't have hash browns here, which is, you know, it's really sort of disconcerting for me. It bothers me. I used to go when I was living in Canada and working. I used to go every morning before I went to work. It's probably why I weighed quite a bit more then. But I would have McDonald's hash browns for breakfast every just two. But every morning I would have McDonald's. So bad for you. It's like fattening and deep fat fried or whatever. Yeah. But there's just something, there's certain things I think in life that you just sort of, there's a flavor that's associated and you just can't get enough of it. So I'm looking forward to making these and seeing how they taste.
I think you should. And from a chef's point of view, like I was doing this for people. And so I could have called that something else. And you can make them little perfect cubes. You can balance little braised meat on them and some sort of horseradish cream. You can freak those out anyway. But I was like, people are going to relate to hash brown potatoes from McDonald's. Like, I wasn't doing it to show how good a chef I am. I was doing it to just be helpful. Like, that was the main kind of mission statement was like, what can I do with what I have right here as well? Because I didn't have a lot. And then what can I do to technique wise that people could use straight away?
Well, I think the nice thing about the way that you described it as well is that it sounded easy. I think if you had started talking about it as, you know, some aperitif or, you know, something fancy, that people would have just turned off right away and there's no way I could do that. So, yeah.
There's no way I could do that. Yeah.
And a lot of those things anyone can do, but they get intimidated by a French term or something kind of says, oh, to whatever clicks, and I can't do that.
But we all can.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun showing people things, techniques.
Well,
go ahead.
No, sorry. I was going to ask, tell me about olive oil and gasoline. That is your, it's a site that you have on Facebook as well as you have it on Instagram. What is the reasoning behind the name and what do you show people on that site?
Olive oil and gasoline, I started that a while ago, kind of brainstormed some ideas because for the past, I've been cooking food for 26 years professionally, and I've been riding my motorcycle around the world for the past
14 years on and off since 2006. So basically, like, all I've been doing in that time has been cooking food and riding motorcycles, so olive oil and gasoline. And that, for those that page, whether it's Instagram or Facebook, look, that could be anything from food to crossing a river on a motorcycle at top speed. You just, those are the two things that I love and I'm focused on right now. And what I've learned through motorcycle travel is intense. To ride through countries with famous dishes like Thailand or Italy, and then to try them and realize and talk to people and where they're from, it just connects you. I had no idea how much I would get from it. Kind of similar to Quarantine Kitchen. Took the first step, took a risk, and then it turns into something, and yeah, thankful.
So you've been nominated now for an award through A-Crew.
Yeah. I'm honored, but it comes with a bit of anxiety as well. You're like, oh, you know, I have that feeling of like, I was just on a boat and I checked out some videos, and I'm definitely humbly, okay, sure, all right, let's try this. But it wasn't a motivating factor at all to this kind of project.
Do you think it actually came through the fact that you did the Quarantine Kitchen?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, the two people nominated me, and it was towards like the kind of the midway point of, because there's 56 days of charter, and when I'm finished, there'll only be like 37 days of video, but that's a pretty good ratio, I think, because there's a little bit of sacrifice in there while I'm on a charter, and not towards the guests, obviously. I was basically, to be perfectly clear, we started working the galley at 7, and we finished at 7, maybe 7:30, and then I would linger around the galley if I had to work on some things for the next day, but it was, as far as charter goes, it wasn't a 20-hour day by any means. I lost the question there. Oh, yeah, so about midway through, my friend and an industry professional separately told me that they'd nominated me for the award, which is, it's amazing. What else can I say then? It's amazing, and I'm appreciative of it. I'm I am in the grouping of some really amazing yacht chefs, and also I searched around some of the other categories, and what can you say? I'm kind of speechless.
Well, I mean, I would say that you deserve it. You put a lot of effort into this, and it was from the kindness of your heart, so why not be rewarded for that? So what is next for you, Brennan? I mean, you know, you do temporary work. Where do you want to go next? Are you going to take on another job? Are you going to get on your motorcycle and ride to parts unknown? What is your plan for the future?
I wish. Well, it's kind of, I think maybe we're all, I almost said in the same boat, but I stopped myself. It's too much of a cliche. I think we're all questioning ourselves right now, and what does the future look like? What can I do with the skills that I have, and where? I would love to go to the motorcycle right now, but I don't trust the numbers that I'm getting out of Indonesia with COVID. I'm pretty much born with asthma. I still have it as an adult. Am I worried? Kind of, but it's probably not going to stop me going back to do anything, really. I don't really like living in that kind of stressful, fearful, what if it doesn't? What if nothing bad ever happens? I'd rather just think like that than worry about every bad possibility that could ever happen. So to answer your question, I don't know yet. I'm going to hang out after that 10-week, one-day-off scenario and work on some more videos. I have a few more Quarantine Kitchens. I'll probably end with sourdough because it's the most complicated. I just shot so many angles, and it's easy to do. I don't want to discourage people. It's not hard to do, but what I did in terms of what it has to be edited is bullshit. I don't know why I did that much. So where am I going? I don't know. Temp jobs, rotation. I would love to go to the bike right now, though. I would love to. It's just how I align. Like, I love my job. It's stressful, and you deal with people from a different social strata, which is interesting. And to go stay sane and stay normal, I go to my motorcycle and just ride around the world. So that, what that means is Indonesia right now. I rode it there from Paris. But before that, in 2000, 2006, 2007, I rode from Miami to South America and back to raise money for Parkinson's disease. So that took about a year, and I rode 37,000 miles, and I raised $45,000 for Parkinson's research. But that was a long time ago, 13 years ago. Now I'm just riding for just because it feels like I want to just explore while I can.
Nice. Well, do you know what? I mean, we wish you all the best, Brennan, and we thank you so much for teaching us so much. Ironically enough, you were talking about sourdough, and I have to be honest, watching all of these lockdown groups straight across social media, sourdough seems to be really popular for people teaching other people how to make it.
Yeah, the sourdough, what Patty and I were doing with the sourdough was independent of Instagram. I just saw him starting the starter, which caused me, I knew I had Tartine Bakery on my Kindle, so I started reading that. It's pretty in-depth, so what I'll try to show on Quarantine Kitchen is at least a video to go along with the text, because I'm going to encourage everyone to go read it, because you can really get the science and how it works, and it's quite fascinating, I think. But yeah, the reason I think people were doing it so often was because it's something that needs to be done kind of right next to you. So for a 3 to 4 hour block of time, every half hour you have to do what's called a turn. And it's easy. It takes 10 seconds to do a turn, but you have to be in kind of as your dough to make it work.
No, I mean, it sounds really interesting. Well, it sounds interesting. I'm telling you right now, I will never make sourdough bread ever, because I don't have the patience for that. I'll make the hash browns and other, but I'm not a bread fan either. So it's probably
I don't like bread, eh?
I don't mind. There's some nice bread out there. Like I like the, I like sort of like with 14 seed bread that I could buy and stuff. And there's some nice bread that you can buy to dip in like olive oil and vinegar. But I'm not a typical, you know, people have
slices. How to make that bread. It's the same. It's the same principle. So there's like, so it's 70, like seven. So just say it's a 75% hydration. So it means, for if you use a kilo of flour, so there would be 700 grams of wholemeal and 300 grams of bread flour. That makes up your kilo, right? So 70% again of that would be 700 mil of water, and that's it. And then you have this beautiful like wholemeal bread that has the same beautiful like airy texture as a sourdough, and you can add seeds to that whatever you want. It's awesome.
Nice. Well, that's great. I'll get right on that.
I don't believe you.
No, I don't know why you don't believe me. I don't understand.
You said you were a bread person. I tried to convince you that you were. My fault.
Do you know what? I can bake. I can actually bake. I'm a good baker. And I'm being Canadian. Most of my cooking skills are, my father was from Newfoundland. My mother was from Vancouver Island. But most of the cooking done in our home was very Newfoundland style. So, you know, Newfoundlanders are originally Irish. Sorry?
Yeah. I've been to Newfoundland. I went to a play there, and I swear they were talking in an Irish lilt. The whole play was basically with an Irish, and it puzzled me. And then you're like, oh, Ireland's like right there. The top of the Northern Hemisphere is geographically quite close.
Well, do you not know the story? The story is that in the Great Potato Famine, what happened is that most of the Irish were going to America because, you know, they were allowed to, I think the price was acceptable. The boats were going to get away from famine. And then all of a sudden, America realized that all the Irish were coming. And so they upped the prices to a point where half of these people on the boats on their way couldn't afford to get into America. So they rerouted to the East Coast of Canada. And that's why you have huge contingent. And I mean, to this day, like my father, before he passed, he was still speaking. I mean, I never knew where it came from. And I thought it was the strangest accent until I actually came to Europe. And I heard these Irish people speak. I was like, whoa, that's my father. This is so strange. But yeah, I mean, you go to Newfoundland to this very day, and the accent is just as strong as if you went to Ireland. It hasn't changed, not one iota. Even the expressions they use are exactly the same.
I believe it. I mean, isn't Montreal kind of a similar thing? Like, I've heard, I've not researched this at all,
it's a bold statement as well, but like the oldest Montreal and basically French Canada is a great example of the way how French used to be spoken, where the France in Europe has kind of changed and naturally gone, evolved into a different direction. I don't know.
It's called peasant French, right. Actually. It's peasant French. Oh, it was, yeah, it was the farmer French that, and when they sent, when France sent the French over to Canada, it was the lower class French that came over originally, according to history. So, you know, that's all changed now, of course, but it's ironic because when the French from Quebec do go to France, which they tend to do quite often, they do find that the French is, it's not similar. It's much the same as I would say speaking Mexican and Spanish.
Yeah, there's a big difference. Yep. That's a good analogy. Old world, new.
Yeah. So it's, how did we get onto this? We've been talking about everything.
Oh, you said where you're from in Newfoundland, and then we started.
Oh, right. I was talking about my cooking. So, you know, I grew up learning how to cook boiled potatoes and corned beef and, you know, all those things, boiled cabbage. I don't know what it is, but the Newfoundlanders, everything's got to be boiled to within an inch of its life, and then you dump a whole pile of salt on it and you call it cooked and done. So that was sort of my cooking experience. And I think it's only been the last 15 or 20 years that I've decided that I really, because I do love food. And I decided that I would have to start branching out, and I've taken some cooking classes, but more along the lines of Asian. I've taken sushi courses, ooh, Thai courses, Indian courses, because that's more my thing. Maybe I don't like bread. Yes, but I do love naan bread, and I love curry and sushi and that kind of thing. I think I wouldn't enjoy making bread, but I do enjoy making a good curry.
All right. Yeah. I like them both. I have room for both. I mean, I don't have to choose. Actually, that would have been a good idea for, it'd been fun to show how to make pasta, how to make like rice pasta. That would have been a good idea. Or how to make udon noodles.
Well, you know what? I mean, just because you're no longer in quarantine doesn't mean you can't continue with Quarantine Kitchen.
Yeah. Who knows? Something to talk about. I have no idea. I'm happy with it, but I feel like it's a little bit weird to keep it going when it's not quarantine anymore. And it's great that it's not quarantine anymore. It's a good thing. So
you can call it post-quarantine kitchen, carrying on. Well, I mean, you can play with the name. It doesn't have to be specifically Quarantine Kitchen. But you know what? I'm sure that those people that followed you throughout your journey would be more than happy to continue following you in the future because, yeah, I mean, there's a place for it. You know, very simple tricks to teach people that aren't culinary experts how to do the basics. And we've got to start getting back to the basics. I think that's one of the things that this whole thing has taught us around the world is that we need to get back to the basics.
I agree. You can't eat out every day. My thoughts would be maybe it could morph into, I'd love to take it on the road, like to the point where I've already bought a camera to do it. But to go to the motorcycle and really keep going with the travel aspect of it. I won't have an area to cook and show things, but I can definitely talk my way into some kitchens or just street food and chatting with locals and looking at techniques. And I think that would be fun, but I'm also not sure what travel looks like anymore. None of us do, which is unfortunate, but we'll find out. We'll find out. I'll let you know how it goes because I'll probably go on the bike no matter what. There's not many cases in Indonesia. We'll see.
Well, you know what? We're going to definitely follow your journey. And I want to say thank you so much for giving us so much information over this time and teaching some of us so much. Others probably already knew, but people like me, you taught me a lot.
Great. You're welcome.
And I also want to say for people... Yeah, well, I want to tell people that if you're interested in following more on what Brennan is doing, head on over to Olive Oil and Gasoline, both on Instagram and on Facebook, and you keep those updated fairly regularly, well, with anything that you happen to have going on.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'll put it up there. Yeah.
And, of course, you can check out our YouTube channel. We've also got the Quarantine Kitchen episodes on our YouTube channel, and I'm sure that whatever... Brennan does in the future, if he allows us, we'll also host that on our YouTube channel as well to keep you informed on what you're up to.
Thanks, Rhea. That's amazing. Thank you. I appreciate the support. I remember when we kept chatting in the beginning, I was amazed that people would want to be a part of it. And thank you for sharing it. It's amazing. Thank you.
No, thank you for giving it to us. And again, everybody, he has been nominated in the Chef category for the A-Crew Awards. Please head on over, give him your support, give him a vote. Let's get him whatever it is, the trophy, the prize, the the accolade.
I don't know.
But vote for him, give him your vote. And yeah, once again, you've been watching another episode of Yacht Crew Vlogs right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Rhea. I am your host. Tune in again for another episode.